Testing, testing, microphone, playback.
Microphone, playback.
Welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 435. My name is James Gilmore. Joining me today is Emily Soden.
Hello.
And Emily Soden's cat, Indy.
She is on one.
She's apparently hiding out behind your PC, pulling out all the cables at the minute. I can see nothing. This has been, incidentally, what I've been listening to for the past 5 minutes. Listeners. It's been a hell of a ride.
Oh, I don't have enough give in my headphones to get both hands around her.
What, to throttle her and end this nightmare once and for all?
No, to try and... Oh,
we do not condone animal slaughter on this podcast, obviously.
No, but Indy... See, I have a desktop computer.
Yes.
And Indy has gotten accustomed to sitting atop my fans. And blocking it so that the computer overheats.
Yeah, but on the upside, great AC for her.
Oh yeah, no, it's blowing right up a bumhole.
She's having a cooling experience.
Exactly, and now she's just chewing on her feet.
Oh, to be a cat.
It would be a simpler life, wouldn't it? It's
the best of lives, just hovering various apertures over spinning blades. It's good times. It's good fun. I'm basically running on pure adrenaline and fumes at the minute, because we've got GDC coming up this weekend, which is, you know what GDC is. You guys are clued in, aren't you? That's going on in San Francisco. I'm not going, but that doesn't mean I don't have to produce a ton of videos for Pocket Gamer to play while they're over there. So I've been doing a very quick catch-up on all the week's games and news, because everyone else has been heavily involved while I've been locked in a bunker doing this. And I turn my back for 5 seconds. And all of a sudden, it's PUBG, Fortnite, Fortcraft all over my face. And screens everywhere. So we're going to have a bunch of that. Luckily, you're my go-to Fortcraft / Fortnite person.
Yeah, which is surprising, actually, considering my severe dislike of shooters.
Yeah, but this is the crossover, isn't it? This is where it ticks both boxes for you, where it's like, it's on your PC, you like that. And to be fair, certainly with Fortnite, it's a bit daft, isn't it? It's a bit colourful and it's not super serial.
Yeah, I think that's why I actually really like it. It's just so mellow.
Yeah. So we're going to be talking about the beta releases of Fortnite and NetEase's Fortcraft, which happens to have launched at the same time and in beta and, bears a striking resemblance. Plus, PUBG Mobile is finally out in the West, albeit just in Canada, in soft launch state. Also, out and about this week, we've got actual full releases, including the likes of Blissful, Armello, Death Coming, My Tamagotchi Forever, and an interview with the guys behind Polytopia, which just released their recent multiplayer update, and we're going to chat about how that community got absolutely massive over the past 2 years, and where it's going next. But first, the news.
News.
So lots has happened in the world of portable, mobile, massively multiplayer shooters. A couple of weeks back, we got the launch of PUBG on mobile. It was launched in China. We played a bit of it. You can see it running on the apps by YouTube channel. Now the US translated version has appeared over in Canada. So it's still not fully released. You can't get it in the UK, but you can play a version where English speakers can actually understand what's on the buttons. Which would have been really useful to me 2 weeks ago. But we ploughed on regardless. So, if you want to go and check that out, do. But the big news this week, really, is that the game that was arguably inspired by PUBG, Fortnite, has also appeared on mobile, albeit in beta form. Now, this is the one that's cooked up by Epic Games, isn't it? The Gears of War boys.
Yeah.
And their version is similar, a bit more cartoony, a bit more daft, and a little bit more built around, well, building things, isn't it? You actually have to create your own cover, right?
Yep. Literally, if you can't do the building thing, You're kind of boned.
Create your own chest-high walls to hide behind, which I guess fits well into the epic canon with Gears of War, which was all about chest-high walls. And it's been around and, you know, got a huge following on PC and everything for ages. And following in the feet of PUBG Mobile, it has now appeared. Now, this is just a beta. You can sign up for it, though I have a feeling they've already hit their peak, their maximum sub, have they?
I mean, they probably have, but they're still, like, on their official website thingy. It still says you can sign up right here. But I think it was Fortcraft that reached their peak.
Wait a minute. Fortcraft? But I thought we were talking about Fortnite. What's Fortcraft?
Oh, well, NetEase is at it again, James.
NetEase, those guys who came out with Rules of Survival just before PUBG Mobile. And Rules of Survival looked an awful lot like PUBG.
That's just coincidental, isn't it?
Purely coincidental. And just like this, they have basically, within the same sort of 24-hour period, launched their own beta for a game called Fortcraft, which...
Yeah, but they got in there first.
Oh, really? Were they the first ones?
Yeah.
God.
I mean, this was after, of course, the news came that Fortnite was coming to mobile, but we won't focus on that at all.
So we've currently got two competing betas, one from the official company that came up with Fortnite, and one from NetEase, which is Fortcraft. You've played them, haven't you?
I have, and I hate to say that Fortcraft actually isn't bad at all.
Really?
Yeah.
Primary differences between the two. But I've looked at videos of them both, because I couldn't get onto the beta in time for the podcast. What's the major differences, if any, between the two?
Slight, very, very, very slight design difference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of the chests are a little bit different, design of the characters and stuff, along the similar style, but still a little tiny bit different.
Okay, so aesthetic stuff looks a little bit different.
And, well, you can build everything at once, and that's about it.
Now, that's the thing I read about. So, in the actual I'm getting confused between the damn things. Actual Fortnite, the original game released on PC, you have to construct your chest high walls, or your buildings, your little four things, by using individual components that you have to put together, right?
So, you have, like, you'll have your floors, your walls, you have stairs, and you kind of just have to construct them as they go. You know, the general one is like a box and then a stair thing, like a ramp in it, so you can go and shoot over the top.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of your go-to.
Right.
But in Fortcraft, it cuts out the middleman and it just gives you one of them. So you can press a button, say construct, and it will just construct it for you, and you won't have to worry about trying to get all the walls around you.
So instant prefab cover, just bosh.
Yeah, pretty much.
Right. So that, I imagine, speeds up play significantly?
Yeah, because, I mean, it's still, you know, the whole technical side of it is you're still shooting people using touchscreen controls. So, you know, we're not the greatest at it. But for me, between the two, I actually much preferred Fortcraft's building.
And so in Fortnite, they've carried over from the PC version the individual constructing of different bits and bobs.
Yeah, and I, you know, I've played the PC one a bunch, and I'm not half bad at it. I'm not the best, but I'm not bad. Mm-hmm. But I still suck at building. So, in mobile terms, I've just got no chance. Like, I tried building up a mountain, and usually I'm quite good at that sort of stuff. Now I've kind of got hang of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I just couldn't do it. I was building ramps absolutely everywhere.
So that just makes me think of the original Lemmings, where you're stopping them, and then you've got the little builder ones that just start building ramps, and you accidentally click the wrong one. You're like, no, don't! Ah. And now it's just building a ramp to nothing, a little ladder to infinity.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like tiny little tiny bit sticking out of a mountainside, or you've built it just below where you need it, or above it, and it's just
useless.
A nightmare. Some people are going to be really good at it, though. I know that, and it's going to annoy me.
So what about between Fortnite PC and Fortnite Mobile? Because with PUBG, it was really very, very close to the PC version, the version that was released. Apart from a couple of things, like you were able to pick up items a little bit quicker, and that was the main bit they'd streamlined. But apart from that, everyone was really surprised by how much it looked and felt almost exactly like the original PC version. How does Fortnite Mobile, or Fortnite Battle Royale, I think it's properly called, how does that compare to Fortnite PC?
It's, like, ridiculously good, as in, like, it's pretty much identical.
Oh, same again.
Yeah, literally the same again, aside from the fact that... I mean, it's weird, because I played it this morning really early, and I swear when you just walked into a door, it just opened for you automatically. But then I played again, like, a few hours ago, and I had to then click on the doors to open them.
Right.
So I think there might be a tiny little bit of a bug in there. But aside from that, you literally, if you've got empty slots in your inventory... you just run through guns and they pick up automatically.
And that's something that the PC version doesn't do. You actually have to stop and collect them.
Yeah, you kind of just spam E until all your slots are filled out, and then you kind of flip-flop them out of your inventory.
Okay, okay. So a little bit of streamlining, but other than that, pretty much the same?
Yeah, literally surprisingly identical. And it's kind of crazy that I was just sort of... I mean, I'm on my PC anyway, so if I wanted to, I could just load up Fortnite, like, now.
Yeah.
But to have it on mobile, to just kind of be like, okay, flip it out, I could be on my couch playing Fortnite.
Now, aren't they trying to make it, like, fully cross-platform?
Yeah, yeah, and actually, playing the mobile version this morning, we're in that kind of the honeymoon stage where everyone sucks.
Yes, the first couple of hours of any game, yeah.
Yeah, so everyone sucks at the moment, and it's great for me. But I cannot imagine how the cross-platform is going to work. Like, even if I go into a team of, you know, of my gaming friends, and they're all on PC, and I'm on mobile, I will just die. Like, instantly. They'll see me sort of waggling my gun around in the air, and I'll just get sniped.
Well, the thing is, people complain about single-platform multiplayer when you're playing on a PC or something, where you're like, oh, the other guy's using cheats, or he's got mods, or he's got a specially modified controller, which is, you know, got buttons taped down, and you can fire off shots far quicker than the average controller. And, you know, they argue about all these granular details, which means that other players have got a certain advantage. If someone else is playing on a PC and you're playing on a touchscreen, that is a massively uneven playing field.
Oh yeah, it's like, it's huge. I mean, the good thing is that if you are playing strictly on mobile and you're just in a team of mobile players, or you're going against, you know, solo or duo or whatever, if you're strictly in mobile, you stay in mobile.
Oh, okay, okay.
But if I were to join up with my friends who are playing on PC, then I'd be put in a PC lobby.
Right.
So I would die, like, within the first 30 seconds.
But then you might, as you said, there are some little streamlined improvements where you pick things up quicker and stuff like that. Maybe they're trying to offset it, so they give mobile some concessions, make it easier to do certain things,
yeah,
versus the PC version, whereas maybe the aiming will be a bit of a pain in the ass on mobile.
Surprisingly, I'm actually a way better shot on mobile than I am on PC, but I do really think that's because everyone else sucks on it at the moment.
Are they doing aiming assist? Do you think it gives it? Because often stuff... No, really, none at all.
No, literally, you move the left side of your screen and you aim with the right side. And at the moment, because I've been playing on my iPad, I literally just waggle the screen around, but it's like really, really responsive.
Okay.
And I think that's just because I got a newer device and stuff like that as well. But I don't know what it is about me and the mouse and keyboard, but I always end up, like, panicking. So my hand goes all over the place and I'm just shooting in the opposite direction.
I can see now in my mind's eye, it's just you having this physical flailing breakdown on your PC keyboard, your cat, like, looking at you puzzled whilst cooling its bum.
Pretty much every, like, solo game of Fortnite ever.
Okay, and so jumping over to Fortcraft for a second. See, I've got the two different versions, like, open in different tabs, and it's just so similar that I'm getting confused as to which is which. there's still too many buttons on screen, still too many. Well, John Munday, who's one of our writer dudes, he's played a bunch of both now, and he's done a big hands-on of Fortcraft on mobile and compared it to Fortnite on mobile, and he says what you said, which is the building is way easier in Fortcraft than in Fortnite. The combat does feel good. A little thing where in Fortcraft, it actually shows you where the deadly gas cloud thing is going to appear.
Yeah, that's actually really useful.
Because in PUBG and the other ones, it's just like the world starts, you know, it shrinks, the gas cloud comes in, so everyone has to run into the center of the map or whatever as the playing area gets smaller and smaller. But you don't necessarily know where that's going to be. So you have to just kind of run into towards the middle and hope that it just doesn't close in around you and you're on the wrong side of that tree at the time.
Yeah.
Whereas this gives you a little kind of blue stripy force field and it shows you you need to be in here. This is where the map will shrink to, if you like.
Mm.
He's been generally quite impressed. I think it's been a bit of a surprise, these, because if you'd said PUBG on mobile, a lot of people were like, no, it's going to be awful. Fortnite, oh, no. And I think everyone is surprised at how faithful and really quite good these translations have been.
Yeah, it's been like, even me, I'm so not a fan of shooters on mobile.
Hmm.
I can't control them, I can't handle them, because everyone is always way better than me and I don't have the coordination.
Okay.
But I do love Fortnite on PC, and having played it now on mobile, it's like, it freaks me out a little bit how identical they are.
That's impressive. Okay. Well, I'm going to have to play it now. I haven't had a chance yet, and my beta invite hasn't come back, so I have to use someone else's password. But I'm going to have a bash on it, and of course there will be videos appearing on AppSpy when I get a hot second. But at the moment, if you want to try and sign up for either of these betas, be it Fortnite or Fortcraft, go for it. And if you happen to be in the US, or rather Canada, at the moment, you can download PUBG Mobile in English in its soft-launched form. So just go multiplayer shooter nuts on mobile. Spoil for choice, you lucky buggers. Forex strategy games can be huge, engrossing projects that take hours, if not days, to play through. But they can be a bit intimidating if you are a newcomer to the genre. If you are, the Battle of Polytopia might be the game for you. Created by Mijuan and Felix, who is joining me today, the lead designer, alongside Sarah, who's the PR community manager. He's here to tell us about where this game came from and how it's got its multiplayer update live and on the app stores right now. Thank you both for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
As I understand it, we had a bit of a chat first, Felix. This game was basically entirely created by you. Is that right?
Yeah, that's true. I've been working on it as a side project for several years. I don't even remember when I started doing it. But it's been an ongoing project. And it was released officially 2 years ago. So, and I also kept working on it constantly after that because I have a lot of more ideas I want to put into the game.
Okay, and for people unfamiliar with the game, as I said at the beginning, it's kind of one of those 4X-style strategy games where you're building and expanding and exploring a map and fighting against tribes. It was a single-player game for the first 2 years, and recently, very recently, you've just launched a multiplayer update. But it feels like, from playing it a bit, that what you were trying to do was drill down to the bare essentials of what the genre offers and make it a little bit more accessible and easy to play, and faster as well on mobile devices. Is that what you were going for?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I basically made a game that I wanted to play myself that I couldn't find, and I was a bit surprised that there were no good streamlined 4X games in the mobile scene that I liked, because I think it's a genre that actually works really well on a mobile, because you can pick it up. It's no action elements, like you can just sit and decide your moves and put down your phone and then think about it and pick it up again and make a move. And, you know, I think it's perfect for a phone.
So presumably you're a fan of this genre. What other things that you think bog the genre down? What were the things that you removed to make it streamlined?
Well, yeah, I worked a lot actually trying to find what the essence of these games were. I mean, I played a lot of Civilization growing up.
Yeah.
And I guess that you can tell if you play Polytopia as well. It has some inspirations from there. I wasn't interested in making a clone of Civilization, of course, because I wanted to make something that's my own. In the beginning, I was trying to make it really minimal to, like, I actually removed all units and everything that was moving, and I just tried to make a game with cities interacting with each other. And it was really hard to make it fun and interesting. In my mind, the game was fun all the time, you know. I could just think about, like, how it would be to play the game. And then I sat down and I made it, and it wasn't fun. And then I had to think again, and then I make again. So I think it's good to have a lot of time if you want to make a good game.
Well, one thing that seems to keep it moving along is, especially at the beginning, there's not that many units that you're dealing with, and it's all quite a quick and easy touch interface. You've also got a 30-round limit there, so you've kind of got this end game point in mind. So you can really race through it if you want to and bam through turns and complete the games very quickly if you're not sitting there and thinking about it. But like you say, you've got the option to just take a turn and then put it down and come back to it an hour or a day later if you want to.
Yeah.
The 30-turn limit, was that something that you thought this is about the right size that a game should be? And did you have an ideal play time in mind? Like, I want to be able to, if I sit down in one session, I want to be able to complete a game in, say, 30 minutes or an hour.
No, I didn't set it up. I actually also don't remember why I picked exactly 30 turns, but I think it's something that, like, grew into it. Like, it felt like that's when I usually finish the game if I play good.
You said that you started out as a side project, you were developing it by yourself. Were you surprised by the reaction? Because, I mean, it's been out for 2 years, but it's built up quite a following in that time. It's got, you know, thousands of ratings on the App Store, which doesn't always happen. Google Play, you get thousands of ratings, but on the App Store, not so much. And the positive reviews are kind of overwhelming. And there's one of our office members, Dave, who's kind of one of our overlord guys. He probably wishes he could be doing this interview because he's addicted to the game and has been for a while. So did it catch you off guard? And after which you decided to bring extra people in. Sarah, as we've already introduced, came on board later. So how did you deal with the success?
Well, I was really surprised. I didn't have any plan to, I mean, I didn't plan to work as a game developer in the beginning. I remember setting a goal that I wanted 10,000 downloads.
Okay.
Then I would be like really satisfied if I get 10,000 people to play my game.
Right.
And then I got like, I don't know, 100,000 in the first day when I released it because I got a feature.
Oh, I see.
On the App Store. So I didn't know what my next goal should be, and I haven't set any goals since then. I'm just like surfing the wave, and it's a lot of fun.
Huh, okay. Has it allowed you the success to move away from your day job and focus on this as more of a full-time project?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it took a while until it became successful enough to like pay my salaries, but now I'm working full-time.
And as we already mentioned, the reason we're talking to you now is because very recently the game went multiplayer. Previously, it was just a single-player campaign, and you'd fight against the AI enemies as you were expanding. You discover them throughout the world. But now you can do multiplayer stuff. A, how hard was that to implement? And B, what impact has that had on the way the game works for everybody else, for normal people just like playing the single-player campaign?
Well, it was kind of tricky, actually, to make it work multiplayer, because I kind of made my own server as well, because I wanted it to be available cross-platform for both Android and iOS, because I had such a big user base on both those platforms.
Right.
And I still wanted to be really easy. I mean, you don't have to log in or anything, because I use Google Play or Apple's Game Center to like identify the players.
Mm-hmm.
And then I made my own kind of server solution to that, so you don't have to like create an account or log in and stuff like that. You just like start playing. It's really like a bare bone multiplayer version at the moment. I mean, there's no like in-game chat or anything like that. So I just, I wanted like take my time to develop it over time, because it's really interesting to hear what people are saying and to follow the fans and how they use the multiplayer server. And I mean, there are some really creative people out there who use Polytopia in different ways that I didn't expect.
You mean like using it as a social tool, or the way they've chosen to build their empires?
The way they like are working together. Maybe Sarah can also say something about this, but there are some, there's a huge crowd on Discord that are inventing different ways to play the game, and they are making tournaments, and they are actually right now I'm in a very absurd multiplayer game that I was invited to, where I think it's like 200 people
wow
on this server discussing one multiplayer game, and there are 12 people who are selected to actually lead one of the tribes.
Uh-huh.
Because you can be 12 tribes in total.
Yeah.
And then all the others are like citizens. So they choose which tribe they and which city in the map they live in. And then they can vote on stuff, and they can like... So this whole diplomacy thing going.
Wow.
I was really like baffled by this. So I was invited to lead one of the tribes in this game. And it was really weird. I had to like ask my population before making any moves in the games and stuff like that.
It sounds really, like EVE Online, that level of bureaucracy that they've created.
It's crazy. It's like they have their own general assembly discussing like war crimes, and everyone has their own ideologies and religions.
Wow.
The fan base there, especially on Discord, is amazing. They have flag competitions for the tribes. People are extremely involved. There are about 10 moderators who more or less are working, not really full time, but an enormous amount of motivation for these people to develop new ways of of working with a Discord, and they're opening up channels and they're discussing everything together, and mm-hmm. they have been flooded with new members since the multiplayer was launched, which is amazing. So they are reorganizing and bringing in more people who can work like part-time for them being moderators. So it's just been, they are overwhelmed but very happy, and especially as Felix is coming in sometimes like the master of the Polytopian universe, they are so excited and happy.
They get hype when the great leader appears.
So what I did when I started with the community work was to strengthen the communities and get the moderators to be a little bit more energized so that they could find the energy to organize more and actually being heard by Midi One himself. Okay. And as we're growing so much on social media too, it needs to be a bit more organized, and it's just growing and growing all the time.
So when did you come on board?
About 5 months ago.
Okay.
6 months ago, yeah.
So that was prior to the multiplayer stuff going live. So you've seen the community presumably before and after this.
Yes, exactly.
So was it one of the features that they were kind of clamoring for in the chats? Were they asking for multiplayer?
Everybody was going wild when the news was out. Everybody was asking, writing, finding all different kinds of ways of communicating with me, like water coming into every crack. Any way they could try to communicate. So everyone was really excited. That was the main thing for a lot of people.
And have you got a sense from dealing with the community closely? And as I understand it, Felix, you were also very tight with the community prior to Sarah coming on board. Speaking to them, have you been able to work out why this has been so popular? What is it that they say they like about it?
The game kind of inspires imagination mm-hmm. because the low poly graphics makes it like your brain can invent a bit what you're seeing, so you can make it, adjust it for your own imagination.
Yeah.
Because it's like, what is that? Is it an apple or a tomato? Or is it, if you like apples, you see an apple. If you like tomatoes, you see a tomato.
What a lot of people are talking about is the, as Felix said, is the graphics, because it looks very appealing. The characters are actually gender neutral.
Yeah.
So you cannot really say who is who and what is this. You can really make up your own idea about the game. Mm. In research, I think that's something that I've heard a lot of people talking about, is how you can learn to do more things. You can learn how to negotiate, and you can learn how to meditate to be able to build a temple, because that is actually something that's valuable for a city to grow. Mm. And those different kinds of values, it's hardcore values like bow and arrow or run fast and harvest fruit and meditate to build temples. I think the variety there that so many different people can find their own thing.
Well, it makes sense. By keeping it very minimal, not only does it work better on a small screen by keeping things relatively like clutter-free and less visual noise, you're right, you add that ability to kind of add a layer of abstraction over the top of it, where people are superimposing their own idea of what things are, and in that way they kind of make it their own.
It's minimalism, which is something that I know that's very important for Felix too, the whole core value, the foundation of that, and also that there hasn't been any commercial ads involved in the game. It's very simple. It's easy to play. You can understand it, and there's nothing interrupting you. It's not noisy with a lot of commercials or ads, which is a wonderful quality.
With the in-app purchases, a lot of people are also telling me that they're really happy about the monetization model, that it's transparent and honest, and I'm not trying to trick anyone into buying anything. It's just like, I mean, you can play forever and have a really full experience of the game forever for free.
Sure.
But if you want to support it, and if you want to like an even richer experience, you can buy stuff to enhance the game. And a lot of people love to buy these things.
Yeah. Is there anything that you've got next on the agenda? You've got the multiplayer stuff live. Is there another thing you wanted to add, another idea you were thinking of bringing to the game?
Well, there are lots of things. I think I'm going to be busy for a couple of more years or so. I don't know. Well, if you look at a tech tree, there is one tech missing to make it symmetrical.
Because it's okay. Really like,
so I have a few ideas, but there's going to be one more technology added to the game. But right. that really also changes everything. If you add one technology, it affects everything. So I really have to
rebalance the whole thing.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
And I don't want to change too much because the game is working really great, but that it disturbs me a lot that it's not symmetrical, the tech tree. And there's also some really great ideas that I want to add there.
Well, it sounds like the community is delighted with the results. And if you guys listening haven't played the game yet, Battle of Polytopia, you can find it on both Google Play and the App Store for free, as we say, without ads. Isn't that nice? Felix, Sarah, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And we'll look forward to seeing how you balance out that tech tree in the future. Out and about this week, let us start with My Tamagotchi Forever. And let me tell you, I'm not going to be playing this game forever.
No. Ooh, I don't even want to be playing it for like the 10 minutes I played it.
So, we have been discussing it and what this game might be after they originally announced it. What were they going to do with it? Were they going to turn it into a big, expansive app where you're taking controls of loads of Tamagotchis? And why are you going to be using in-app purchases to buy them food or they starve to death? The answer is, yeah, all of that. I immediately find it irritating right off of the bat. Because, and it's not a surprise, they've done it in a very, very cutesy style. It's very cartoony and Animal Crossing-y and big heads. And you start off with your little Tamagotchi, your little Tama character, who looks a little bit like the 4-pixel-sized thing you used to get on the actual egg screen of the original keychain game. Mm. And the creature is really annoying. It's doing that, yeah, yeah, oh, mama, mama. Maybe I don't have the paternal instinct, but that immediately just puts my teeth on edge because it's being cutesy and whiny. And it walks you through all the basics of the stuff you can do with a normal Tamagotchi. So yes, it is. Make it happy by putting your finger on and, you know, giving it a wee stroke, giving it a wee pet. And then you want to feed it. And to feed it, you go to a table and you've got 3 plates. And then you can go and choose food to put on that plate and then feed it to them. And that'll make them happy. And obviously, you've got to use the toilet. So you take him to the toilet and then he craps on the floor. And it's like, oh, it's so cute. Crap on the floor. Isn't that adorable? So you have to clean it up. And then you have to put it to bed. And then there's a whole town to explore as well. So you take it out and do activities with it. And then another one turns up. An egg appears in the front room. And you tap to hatch the egg. And then you've got another one. A little even smaller and more annoying and whiny. And then the other one buggers off and you're left with that. It's just, it's the free-to-play, grossly cynical thing that I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
So, yeah, you have to buy the food, and the food costs coins, and obviously you have a limited number of coins, and so if you run out of coins, you can buy more gems or coins or whatever. It's got gems as well, to give it the food that it wants. So there is... I haven't played it enough to prove this, so I'm speculating, but conceivably there's a situation where you've played loads of the game and spent all your coins on Tamagotchi Tat and run out of coins, and now your Tamagotchi needs feeding and you got no money, so you have to actually pay real money or your Tamagotchi starves to death.
Yeah, no, I think Dave actually realized that you can't kill it.
Oh, what?
It just whines at you for life.
No.
Yeah. Yep, it does.
So it's just perpetually starving.
Yeah, just perpetually starving and miserable. Because it came out Wednesday night, I think, on Android. Uh-huh. So I fired up the game. I was like, yeah, I'll give it a go. You know, I was curious. And I played about 10 minutes of it, got really annoyed at it because it was just being really whiny. So I put it down, went to make dinner. I kept hearing my phone going off because I left my phone upstairs. Came up thinking it was WhatsApp or something. Turns out I had like 6 notifications from My Tamagotchi Forever being like, oh, your Tamagotchi is hungry. Oh, he's bored. Oh, I'm like, oh, who cares?
That is the game, though. Like, I'm being all miserable about it because I find this stuff irritating. But if you don't, if you do want requited love from your phone, desperately demanding your attention at all times, and that makes you feel wanted and better, then this will be a godsend, presumably.
Yeah, but it just, the thing, it depletes so quickly.
Because each individual action, so, you know, the going to sleep or eating or making it happy, it's got a little level indicator and it gradually goes down over time, and then you need to replenish it by performing that action a bit more. And as you say, the timers, they tick down quite quickly.
Yeah, like, I don't think I was gone more than half an hour before I got all those notifications through, being like, oh, your Tamagotchi is literally going to die if you don't come back. But he's not.
See, I tell you what this reminded me of. This is just like Nintendogs.
Really? I could deal with Nintendogs.
Well, yeah, exactly. It's Nintendogs without the charm of having a little actual doggy or Nintendcats or whatever they call it. You know, the little animal versions running around on your screen. Because all that stuff where you're like, you know, rubbing the screen to pet it and all that, you know, that's just Nintendogs. That is.
Yeah.
But that was really charming and adorable. Whereas this is just like brightly coloured saccharine and irritating.
Yeah, they should put that in the description.
That's my box quote for the back. Yeah.
Yeah, but actually, I never thought about it like that, actually. It literally is just Nintendogs without the charm.
Because you have to wash it and you clean it and you hold the little shower head and you move it around to give it a clean and you're washing soap all over it and you're like playing with it and like, that's Nintendogs. And I don't feel this way about Nintendogs because the little dog's really nicely animated and runs around and is properly engaging and you're like, oh, bless it. Whereas this is just thinking,
yeah, this is something we didn't ask for, but we're stuck with.
I guess. Bring Nintendogs to mobile. I'll play that. But my Tamagotchi Forever, it's getting the thumbs down from me. But maybe I'm not wired to appreciate it. So if you want to give it a go, it is free to play, obviously, and out right now on iOS and Android. Go and fill your boots. So, a few other things beyond all of this Fortnite business. I had a quick go at Death Coming, which is actually quite interesting. So it's an isometric 16-bit style game where you are effectively, it's like a god game, but instead of playing god, you're playing death. And the idea is that you're presented with this town of people wandering around, and you have to, say, kill a number of people in the level, but you don't kill them by controlling a character and running up to them and stab them. Obviously, you are death and in control of essentially fate. So it's like you're playing Final Destination and you are the force that's killing people. So the people are wandering around the town and you'll be able to tap on and interact with items and objects that could potentially cause fatal accidents. So there'll be a person standing on the ground and at the top of that building there might be, I don't know, a ventilation unit. And if you tap that ventilation unit twice, then it'll fall off and splat, kill the dude beneath.
That's very Hot Fuzz.
It is a bit Hot Fuzz, isn't it? And someone might be sitting on a bench next to a street lamp, and that street lamp might have a puddle underneath it and a little bit of electricity fizzling. So if you double tap that, then it will suddenly explode. Electricity will fizzle through the puddle and electrocute the person on the bench. All of this reminded me of Hitman, especially the Hitman Sniper game that came to mobile, where the idea is you've just got that house, the building, people are wandering around, and it's up to you to take them out in different and inventive ways. Particularly things like shoot the air conditioning unit will explode and that will kill the person standing next to it, rather than just shooting the person in the head. So it's kind of lots of indirect murder. And I think it's a bit ropey in terms of some of the like speech bubbles and the way that the game explains itself to you. I'm not too impressed with that aspect of it, but the actual game bit is actually quite fun as a little sandbox for let's poke stuff and see what happens. How many different inventive ways can I kill people? And then the game gives you different missions. So it's like identifying three people that you have to kill. And it's not obvious who these three people are because they appear quite small on the screen. So it's kind of a Where's Wally, a murderous Where's Wally type of game. And I've played it for about sort of 20 minutes, 30 minutes, and I'm tempted to go back to it. It is quite cool. It's £1.99 or $1.99. I'll maybe do a video and we'll get more in-depth on it. But Death Coming is the name. Armello, I honestly never thought I'd see this day, Emily.
Well, it's been a hot, sweet minute.
It's been about 4 years. I went to Gamescom 1 year and I went hands-on with Armello, the iPad version. And I think it was 2015.
My God, that feels like ages ago, doesn't it?
Yeah, and that was like before the game was actually launched on consoles. And I was like, okay, so they're going to do some kind of dual launch thing. Yeah, whole 3.5 years later, we've actually got it. It's appeared on iOS in free-to-play form, which is interesting because it was, I'm pretty sure, definitely a premium release 4 years ago when I saw it. But it's a hex-based tactical game. So it's a little bit card game, a little bit tabletop 4X. But it's stripped down a little bit. It's got very big cartoony style characters. You're taking control of these anthropomorphic animals who are wandering around and you have to go and, you know, defeat your people and get to the middle of the board and you get, which is the throne. You're trying to basically become king. It's been a long time since I've actually played it, and I haven't played this new version of it, but being as it's free to play, you go and have a look. I quite liked the look of the original game, and when we played it the first time around, the first impressions were good, and I think the console and PC versions got sort of like 7s and 8s out of 10. I think people were pretty warm to it. But I'll have to reserve judgment till I play the real mobile game. But it's out right now. Armello is the name. Blissful came out as well. Have you seen this?
Is that like that weird Sudoku-esque Rubik's Cube padlock game?
Exactly that, yeah. So this is a game that is not what you think it's going to be, because it presents itself as this very cutesy little puzzler that you think, oh, all right, this will be easy fun. And then by this third level, you're like, what? What? Which is really unusual. So the way that it's set out is there are lots of padlocks on the screen. Padlocks which are opened by putting in a number combination. So they've only got two digits on each padlock, right? And so you've got these little padlocks. They've got little smiley faces. They're all bright yellow. And you're like, oh, this will be fun and engaging and colourful. And they appear on the screen in a grid, a 3x3 grid. And the first level says, right, what you have to do is arrange the order of these padlocks so that the number on each of them goes from lowest to highest. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And so you're just swiping on the screen and moving, swapping them around. So you swipe one and it kind of does that thing that match three puzzlers do, where when you drag the padlock on, it kind of switches positions. You're like, all right, this is fine, easy, swipe, 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 done. And then from level two onwards, it's like, okay, do the same thing, but now here's the grid of six. And when you move, when you slide, let's say, sideways, so you pick the top left padlock in the grid of, in the, and it's got a row of three, and you slide that first padlock to the right, it moves a block to the right, but so do all the other padlocks. And the one on the end, the one in the third slot, the top right, that one kind of moves around and goes back to the top left position. So it kind of rotates round, which is where the Rubik's Cube aspect comes in.
Gotcha.
So you're pushing it, and it's kind of pushing one off the end, but then that one that has fallen off the end goes back to the beginning again. So you've got to imagine it's kind of like rotating in a circle almost. And that happens in both directions, north to south and east to west. And so when you get one of them in place, you're like, great. And then you swipe down and then you realize, oh, no, I'm pulling that one out. And now that one's gone from the bottom to the top. And So that's the best way of explaining it. Imagine the Rubik's Cube. And as with the Rubik's Cube, the moment you get one side sorted, you turn it around to the next side. And obviously, you immediately disrupt the thing you fixed by trying to fix the other side. So it's way more complicated and a lot more heavy duty than it initially appears to be. We've reviewed it and we weren't in love with it. I know John said basically that, yeah, it presents itself as cute and fluffy and is actually anything but, and doesn't really explain itself particularly well, and sort of becomes a little bit frustrating quite quickly. And it's premium. So 99 pence or 99 cents. Perhaps if you're a super puzzle freak or a Sudoku person or something, then yes, this will be right up your street. But go in with a little bit of caution, I'd say. So Blissful, double L, is the name of that one. Re-release here. So Fighting Fantasy Classics, which is the Ian Livingstone game, which was kind of a merger of all of his 1980s, a lot of the 1980s. Turn-the-page-style adventure novels, where you go to page 58 to kick him in the balls, those novels. And it's been re-released because Asmodee has taken control of the franchise, basically. They've secured publishing rights, so it's back on the App Store. What?
You said Fighting Fantasy Classics. That's Fighting Fantasy Legends.
Oh, so there's two of them.
Yeah, Fighting Fantasy Classics is the compilation app that came out yesterday.
Oh.
So that's where you get, like, that's kind of a place where you can now read all of the game books in one place, as opposed to reading them all separately, and it'll get more editions. It's kind of like Sega Forever for those sorts of games, and then Fighting Fantasy Legends is the one that got re-released by Asmodee.
That's the one I've played already. Okay, yeah, sorry. Too many similar things this week, Emily. Too many Fortnites and Fortcrafts and Classics and Legends and... Just stop.
I know. This is why my memory works the way it does. Like, if you ask me what I did last week, I can't tell you. If you ask me what I do this week, I can tell you every second.
Okay. Fighting Fantasy Legends is a re-release one. It's £4.99, $4.99, and is kind of a top-down adventure and takes the narrative of some of those game books and puts it into a more traditional isometric style game, whereas, as you say, Final Fantasy Classics is more like a wrapper app that lets you play the original book textbook adventure games. So there you go. Those are the two things you can go for there. And there is a bunch more stuff. I suggest you have a look at M's big old list, because there's another huge chunk of stuff that's out this week, but that covers the most of it, I think. And that'll do.
Yep, it's been a battle royale kind of week, and I'm exhausted.
It has. We should all go off and fight hundreds and hundreds of strangers simultaneously on the internet. That's just the internet, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. As any keyboard warrior jumps on the bandwagon and off you go, except this time they've got guns in their hands.
Oh, I've got my hashtags ready. Mm-hmm. And my pings pinging.
Oh, yeah.
All right, then. Well, thank you ever so much for listening to us this week. We've seen a steady increase in the number of subscribers again. So thank you. If you're new, then welcome. I hope you haven't been immediately put off. We're going to be having some more stuff with Rick, who was on last week. I forgot to mention that you weren't here last week, but now you are.
They know.
So we're going to try and do group casts now that Rick's got a working microphone, so we can have some three-way chat, because that's always fun as well. But join us next week for more mobile gaming chat. And in the meantime, go and play something. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
See ya.